Hey everybody, this is Evan Arnold, your host of the Toncast. It's nice to be with you all again. I've had to take a little break from being your host, but I have a similar guest to the one I had before. His name's Todd Robert Anderson, I believe.
Yeah, that's me.
Now, you're from, Sherborne or bumfuck Massachusetts. What's it called?
It's called Sherborne.
But it's not Sherborne?
Well, in Massachusetts, people say Sherborne.
Yeah. Do they?
Sure.
Okay. Born. I can do stuff like that. I'll podcast.
I don't doubt it.
What was it like growing up there? Is that like in Philadelphia, it's Amish and Mennonite? Or like what goes on there?
There's no Amish people.
I don't know.
In the area I grew up in. I'm not familiar with an Amish population in Massachusetts.
Probably isn't. I know nothing about anything. What was there besides gingers?
There were gingers, but there were all different kinds of people in Massachusetts. Although it was kind of segregated when I grew up.
I love segregation.
You're into segregation?
Tell me more about that, yeah.
Well, there were just very particular towns that had a very particular population.
Was it just black or white, or was it Irish versus a type of Asian? Like, what do you
remember? Well, there was definitely black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods, but there were like more Irish areas. There were Italian areas, Jewish areas, and people, you know, it was sort of this, it, Massachusetts has this reputation for being, you know, liberal and democratic and all that, you know, the Kennedys are from there and all that, but it is definitely, definitely antiquated, at least when I grew up. I don't live there anymore, so I can't speak to it now.
How often do you go back, ever?
Well, I go back. The only part of Massachusetts I really see anymore is where my sister lives. She lives in the deep woods in Western Mass. So I see that.
But Sherborne was mid-Western Mass, her deep woods, or further westerly? Or like
At the time, it was the outermost ring of suburbs. It was about like a half hour, 40 minutes outside of Boston.
Okay, for
now,
people listening...
Now there are more, even further out rings of suburbs because of population growth. And people need houses.
Absolutely. There's something on... HuffPost recently where, you know, in 1 minute you can see how the population density of all these different cities grow. And it's kind of interesting if you're having trouble sleeping. That's what I found.
You sleep well when you realize that the population continues to explode?
It's just, they're pretty fractal pictures for me. It has a soporific effect.
Okay.
I'm more lactose intolerant now, so I can't do the warm milk.
Oh.
I'm having trouble sleeping.
Uh-huh.
I like that That was great. So, is your sister in touch with the environment, or is she a hick? Like, what is she living deeper in the woods there? What is that?
Well, yeah, she likes, her and her husband like the ruralness.
Yeah.
Woodsiness. Yeah, they're woodsy folk. They're not hicks, though. I wouldn't call them that.
Is she a breeder?
She bred one child and adopted a second one.
Well, that is awesome.
It is.
Wow. Yeah, I have a bunch of friends these days that are doing fostering and fostering towards adoption, and they're just better people.
Than you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't have the patience?
I'm just shallow. Yeah, why am I shallow? What's the crux of my shallowicity? I don't know. I'm just selfish, self-centered. I just love my seed over everybody else's, I guess.
Oh, that's what, so you don't want to adopt or foster. You want to have your own children, is what you're saying.
Well, I wouldn't mind doing it later if I were rich, if I won the lottery, but I feel like...
like an Angelina Jolie thing, just like travel the world adopting tons of children?
There's probably got to be some critical mass for me before I'd start beating them. I probably couldn't. I don't know. People always say once you get to three or more, it's just zone defense, and then three, five, seven, it doesn't really matter. The biggest shift is 0 to 1, and then, I don't know, there are interesting shifts from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3, and then beyond that.
Sure, sure.
Let them run pell-mell, and most of them live.
Yeah, well, that's what it's about. Like so, Darwin. That's what Darwin learned from having lots of children. So, some of them don't make it, but most of them do.
How many kids did he have? How many lived?
I'm not sure, but he had a lot, like 10 kids or something like that, and 2 or 3 of them didn't make it.
Yeah.
But him and his wife, they were related.
That's hot. How closely related? Do you remember?
I think they were cousins, maybe first cousins.
Ah, so...
He's one of the people who sort of discovered that inbreeding was not good.
And he did it firsthand.
Firsthand research.
Just like Bruce Banner or any good Marvel scientist, you do the research on yourself first.
Yeah, yeah, that's always the right way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to be careful because, you know, if you're friends with Nick Nolte, he might try to do research on himself and turn into a giant bubble.
That movie was okay. I don't know.
Ang Lee's Hulk?
Yeah.
Ang Lee's Hulk is, I thought was, amusing.
I heard recently that Eric Bana had done stand-up for a while. I wonder if they're...
Eric Bana was a stand-up comic?
Yeah.
That's
I'd like to find those tapes.
I would, too.
But, so, speaking of stand-up careers, how often have you been performing with, written work? Stage in front of people live. Not on camera.
I don't do it much these days because I have the family, and the theater takes you away from the family at night.
Especially the unpaid theater.
Yeah, I would never see them if I did unpaid theater. But every now and again, I do a storytelling evening.
Right.
Called Public School at the M Bar.
Because I saw you once at the M Bar, but I don't remember if it was called Public School that night. It might have been under.
If you saw me at
banner.
The M Bar, it was Public School.
It was.
Okay. Night of storytelling, yeah.
Well, as you know, I'm often high to some extent, and so.
On what?
Usually scotch.
Scotch. You get high on scotch and life and
like
sports.
I did last night, I told you. I just
go
blind.
You get blind drunk.
But I try to stay away from that because. That I'm weak and people try to have sex with me and I'm trying to stay true to my commitments in early
life. Oh, yeah. Does that happen a lot when you drink, that you wind up having sex with strangers?
No, those are just fantasies, but I often do start to go blind. I become very myopic and the world closes in. Speaking of death, last night you invited me for once. Instead of me hosting you on the Toncast, you said, come be a part of something I'm doing. It's called the Film Pigs, and it is a series of webisodes you've been doing as a film aficionado with your buddies. This was like your 86th episode. Tell me more about the genesis of this, evolution, what you're doing, what your entire financial structure is. In terms of getting advertisers, what's the long game? How do you afford it? How much does it cost? What's it going to pay you? What connections you're making? What kind of psychic income it brings to you? And what is the trade-off between seeing your family and getting a break from your family and then going out to drink afterwards with friends and putting them in compromising situations?
The Film Pigs actually has been a comedy group for a long time. Since the late 90s, different incarnations, stage, internets, podcasts, all those things. What you were a part of last night was the Film Pigs on Geek Nation, which is a website which was launched, I guess, a couple years ago now. One of the owners of Geek Nation is a woman named Claire Kramer. She's an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And she's friends with another actress named Julie Benz.
I kissed her.
Julie Benz.
Yeah, on an episode of Angel, if it's the same one.
Yeah, was, yeah, sure.
Banging John Cassier, and now she fell in love with, I don't know, Michael Hall, and he said no, and then she's off to somebody else. I hear lots of rumors.
I don't know if she fell in love with Michael Hall.
It wasn't him.
That.
I'm just throwing she's a name married. She was on Dexter. That's all I meant.
Yeah, she was on Dexter.
She's remarried?
Yeah.
What's his name?
I can't remember. I met him once.
Nice enough?
Nice fella.
Good.
Yeah.
Her lips were like pillows. It was astounding.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh.
Right before I got dusted, Shiv in the back on Angel, I kissed. I was playing a nerdy vampire named Shempire.
Uh-huh.
And the director was very nice and pretended there was something wrong with the take, so we'd have to do it again.
Oh, that's good.
Like Angel Cloud Pillows.
Angel Cloud Pillows.
It was lovely.
It sounds lovely.
Yeah, there was no tongue flicking. There was no swapping fluids. It was very...
But it was a
WB
kiss.
Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, it was a nice screen kiss.
I was just like, that gal's got something.
And she's a pretty one.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of pretty actresses.
But she's got something more, is what you're saying.
Yeah, lips.
Lips.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most actresses don't have proper lips.
Thank you. Not proper.
Yeah,
not
but proper. Julie Benz has proper lips.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So, in any event...
Sorry.
She told Claire about... Because Claire was on Buffy as well. They were both on Buffy. And I guess Angel. I don't know if Claire was on Angel. I don't know who was doing what. Anyway, so we met with them before they started their website and told them kind of what we wanted to do. And they said, okay. And as far as money's concerned...
Wait, just so I understand the structure, it's kind of like you can have a channel on YouTube, they have their own website, which is Geek Nation, and you're a show that appears there, are you a sub-channel, or are you just a show, like...
Well, Geek Nation is its own thing, that's their concept, like exclusive content.
Although, so you go to geeknation.com?
Yeah.
And so they own your show, or they just...
We kind of co-own the show.
Okay.
We co-own it. And basically, they give us our meager budget every week.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get paid. It's all for fun.
Mm-hmm.
To have a laugh, get together with friends, you know. It's like some guys have their Tuesday night poker game.
Mm-hmm.
I have my Tuesday night web series shoot.
I see.
Very cool. As far as you had talked about family and, you know, so that's my night.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then a little action at the chimney sweep or wherever else.
Yeah. After. Well, we used to go to the Cork all the time.
You mentioned that. Where's that? Haven't been there.
The Cork is a lounge in the back of a diner called Corky's on Van Nuys.
Right.
Just north of the 101.
I've passed it many a time.
Yeah.
I've never been in.
In the back, there's a lounge.
The Cork.
And we used to go there because you could get some food. You get some diner food, some beers. And there was a jukebox, and there were interesting characters in there because it's sort of a strange place,
mm-hmm.
so it was entertaining. But they've introduced live music.
Yeah, kind of like they used to do at the kibitz room at Canner's. You know,
yeah.
They'd have a separate room where they could have something like
that.
I don't know. I haven't been in the
Sure. That's sort of the idea. But the problem is we preferred it when it was just a juke joint. And
why don't you get wealthier and have the kind of place you want? And control it so it doesn't change.
That's a really good question. And I don't know why I'm not getting wealthier. I don't know. I guess I'm resistant to it.
Why don't you just make sure you have a much higher quote or get renegotiations that are fantastically, astronomically high?
That's a great idea. I'm going to look into that.
All right. Call your people.
Yeah.
Because I want you. Yeah, I struggle with control all the time.
Yeah.
I want to control a lot of things.
Yeah.
But things are out of our control. There's change.
I'm 42. I'm mostly concerned about controlling my bowels at this point. I'm not worried about anything else.
All right. I was reading about, it's called steatopygia, which is when you have excess fat in your buttocks.
Mm-hmm.
And in Wikipedia, there was a link to, I guess it's steatorrhea, where you have excess fat in your stool. And so the lipid content or such makes the poop float. And I guess a healthier poop is not really supposed to float.
It's supposed to sink.
It's supposed to have a solid sinker.
That's what you're
looking
for.
And also it's supposed to be a certain color. It's supposed to be kind of darker, you know? If it's too light, that's not good, and too dark is not good. And if you're not eating beets, it shouldn't be purpley red either, I guess. How often do you poop and see any blood in your stool and think, oh God, I might only have weeks left to live? Does this ever happen to you, or is this just me?
I don't experience a lot of blood in my stool.
Okay. You don't often engage in anal play?
You mean it? No.
No prison rape? Stuff like that?
I'm not a big anal guy.
And you keep your diet pretty even?
Yeah.
I mean, tranche.
Yeah, I try to eat healthy, but quite often I don't. I mean to have one or two cheat days a week, and I usually have an extra cheat day. But you know,
where do you get your fiber?
Well, from fruit.
That's what you're supposed to do.
And I eat cereal.
Yeah, grape nuts.
I don't eat grape nuts. All I don't like grape nuts.
Raisin bran. Cracklin bran.
I eat Mueslix.
Okay.
It's got lots of delicious fibrous things.
Do you ever go to the bathroom and you wonder if you're going to be able to push it out? And you're thinking, maybe this is like birth. I need time for the sphincter that is my butt ring to expand. Or, like, this is not going to come out.
I guess. I mean, I don't have a lot of trouble with constipation.
Because I've had it a couple times where I thought, oh, I get it. Don Simpson died on the crapper, probably pushing too hard.
Yeah.
Popped an aneurysm.
It's not uncommon for people to have heart attacks while on the toilet.
Yeah.
Probably for that very reason, working too hard to get it out.
I can see in your eyes you have some concern based on our conversation. This has not happened to me recently, nor frequently, but these are memories for me. These are strong memories.
They sound strong.
What's a strong memory from your childhood when you were looking at the neighbor herds in Sherburne and thinking, what kind of white guy am I?
What kind of white guy am I?
Yeah, because when we were talking about the segregation in the neighborhoods, I could sense you were identifying yourself more with the whites than the blacks. But I was wondering what type of white you were and how you perceived where you fit amongst the white strata.
Well, I don't feel like I really fit in very well in my hometown, to be quite honest with you. I think I was more of a blue-collar type white fella in a white-collar white fella town.
Oh, really? So yeah. Sherburne had a lot of white-collar.
And I didn't really... To be honest, I never really thought about whiteness, you know, because everybody there was white, and my world was white. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying about the Massachusetts segregation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't until... I mean, I knew some black people who came to my school. Because they had one of those programs where inner city kids would come out to the suburbs for a better education.
We called it busing here.
Yeah, busing, sure. But they were, you know, in my school, like the black people were, especially the black boys, they were the superstars.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought they were awesome and everyone wanted to be friends.
Aren't they still?
Sure, yeah. Well, I've actually keep sort of in Facebook touch with one of the guys, this guy Kurt. He was great, but and still is. It's funny. Growing up, I always think about this. It's surrounded by white people, and when you grow up in a certain environment or with a certain set of beliefs, you don't really question it when you're a child.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't realize how segregated we were and how white privileged we were until, you know, I grew up and realized, oh, that's how I grew up. And I think it's sort of a regretful way for people to grow up.
To be ignorant? pre-epiphanies?
Sure.
But, I mean, was there a point... I mean, naturally, you're just going to start perceiving the world in different ways at different points. There's going to be some point of inflection or a moment where you get a sense or you're bummed out. You're like, oh,
yeah,
somebody has more money than me. Oh, I have more money than somebody else. Oh, someone doesn't like me because I live over here, and maybe it's not classist. Maybe it's... I was curious about different communities, like Irish Catholic versus Jewish versus Protestant versus... Yeah. Something else. I mean, do you know now that you were in another subsection that wasn't just based on class, that was more ethnic or religious? Or
you mean that the town of Sherbourne?
Yeah, how homogenous
it was just wealthy white for the most part.
Okay, so but you were middle class, lower middle class, blue collar.
My family was just straight up middle class.
Okay.
But by the time I graduated high school, my parents moved there.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
But the family that owned most of the land in the town, they had apple orchards, started selling a lot of their land off
mm-hmm.
to people. And then wealthier and wealthier people moved in and built, you know, giant houses and all that stuff.
Yeah, did you care about any of that? Did that piss you off when the landscape changed? And
it pissed my dad off a lot because, you know, a lot of the reason they moved in was for, you know, idyllic vistas and stuff that would get destroyed by people putting their mansions in the vistas. For me, it was more just a matter of, you know, growing up with people that wealthy when I wasn't that wealthy. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to, like... you know, Cancun for spring break,
mm-hmm.
and I'm staying home.
And so how that make you feel? And at what age did you realize
they go out to eat every night of the week,
uh-huh.
and they're always calling and saying, "Hey, you want to come out to, you know, the restaurant?" And we'll and I'm like, "No, I don't have the money to go to a restaurant tonight."
Did you feel like you were Peter Parker buddied with Harry Osborn or whoever the son is in Spider-Man? Like you were. You're a middle-class kid, but, you know, there's some rich kids here, and you're trying to figure out, like, how you feel about that. I mean, why do you hate the man? Why are you so angry?
I'm not angry. I'm just telling you it was, you know, it was just how I grew up and how I felt. I'm not angry about it anymore. Why are you putting anger on me?
Well, I think I'm projecting my anger onto you because that would make me more comfortable.
Oh.
That's the lens I view things through.
Oh, okay.
But I'd like you to consider that whether you're angry or not, maybe you should be.
So you think I should be angrier?
No, I would just want you to consider it.
All right, I'll think about it.
Okay, good.
I used to be much angrier when I was young.
Yeah, when? What point? Name something that pissed you off in the past. I'll give you your whole life
uh-huh.
to choose from. Or made you sad when you thought you... saw something in a different way, felt something, understood something in a different way growing up. Yeah, I want Sherbourne.
You want me to be angry at Sherbourne?
No, from your time there.
Well, when I got to college, looking back, I was angry about my religion and religion in general.
Yeah? What was yours?
Catholicism.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And just because, like, it was too organized, or you just thought your sect was more whack than another, or just all religion? What?
Well,
religion. Let's go.
With Catholicism, in particular, I think it was damaging to me and my psyche, especially my sexuality. And, looking back on it, I was angry of that manipulation.
What do you think of this new Pope? I think he seems pretty cool relative to your average Pope.
Relative to your average Pope? Sure. But he's still a Catholic Pope,
mm-hmm.
and it's still Catholicism. I mean, if, you know, my attitude about religion is, you know, if it makes you happy, it makes you happy. But just be careful
mm-hmm.
of the destructive qualities of what your religion can do to the world, to children.
Right. So what offends you the most, looking back? How did it affect your sexuality? You know, what was limiting, what was abusive, what was ridiculous?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, as I was a child, I was apparently in terrible danger of molestation
mm-hmm.
in the Catholic Church. That never happened to me, but that's a thankful thing. But, I mean, in a larger sense, Catholicism is very sex is a sin. You know, sex.
But can't you just say I did it? I'm sorry, and then they say whatever. Have a few Bloody Marys.
Yeah. That's a way of doing it. You can have some Bloody Marys, which I enjoy. But the point is even if you do go in and confess your sins, you're carrying a massive amount of guilt,
right,
for having natural biological functions,
mm-hmm,
that are maybe one of the great parts of being human. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And you have to feel guilty just about the way you're built,
mm-hmm,
and desires and all those things. And that, when you're brought up that way as a child, it never leaves you.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I haven't been, you know, a practicing Catholic for, what am I, 42? So almost 21 years. Mm-hmm. But I still carry a level of guilt about sex.
Mm-hmm. Is there a chance, though, that guilt and shame make sex hotter?
No, not for me. I mean, I get it. But I think that ultimately kind of will backfire on you. That's good for a while,
mm-hmm,
but then it kind of it'll have its ill effects.
But how long till ultimately? Because if you're being filleted by a young woman these days,
mm-hmm,
and she looks up at you like, do you like that? Yeah. Yeah, you like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep going. Yeah. And you're thinking, where's the shame? Where's the guilt?
Right.
And you start to lose your erection because you're thinking, nothing in this act is wrong. And you're not manipulating her into doing this. And you're not debasing, degrading, fustigating this fellow human being and disrespecting them. This is an exchange amongst equals. Doesn't that take some of the charge out of it?
Not for me.
No?
No,
what's your
prefer
approach to sexuality?
An enthusiastic woman who does like giving blowjobs, who hasn't been manipulated into it, just enjoys it.
All right. So you don't miss shame.
I mean, I got nothing against role playing. Okay. You know, the occasional,
right,
you know, role playing thing where there's shame involved. That's, you know, that's fine. But it's not. I'm not looking for that to be, you know, the way of things.
Yeah.
Which it sounds like sort of how you.
No, it never worked for me. Actually, I had an ex girlfriend 20 years ago. She always wanted. She had these rape fantasies, and she had one of those typical 70s vans. She wanted me to take the keys, drive around the block, pull into her driveway, say, ma'am, could you come over here for a moment, open up the door of the van, push her in, and fuck the shit out of her. And I tried to do it. It's probably some of my early acting career, and it was probably helpful in some way. But I don't know. It just didn't work for me. It just felt wrong.
Well, that's some elaborate role-playing. I don't think you necessarily need to go that. That's rape fantasy. That's a different ball of wax.
And that was her thing. And then, I don't know. Yeah, so that didn't work for me. So I'm all about a partner who's safe, sane, and consensual.
Oh, okay.
But,
Well, role-playing is supposed to be safe, sane, and consensual. It's just you're playing
roles. Talked about this? Maybe we did last time I had you on the Toncast. Some of your safe words.
I don't know that we talked about my safe words. My go-to safe word, mm-hmm, is stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
I think you should develop another one.
Really?
I'm not trying to slam stop. You know, in my mindful practice, I teach a lot of people to stop. To stop,
uh-huh,
take a breath,
uh-huh,
observe,
uh-huh,
and then proceed.
Where are you teaching people? And, like, is this just wisdom that you impart on people, or is there a seminar?
No, I have many fake acting classes and many fake seminars that I teach or at least take sign-ups for. So
okay.
This is another one, along with Definition Actor.
Uh-huh.
But
Definition Actor is your acting, you know, intensive.
Yeah, fake commercial acting workshop that,
right,
I've been quasi-running for years.
Right.
So,
but it doesn't never really happens.
That's not really the point for me. And I don't think we need to bore the listeners with that. I want to know more about growing up with your sister. How was her sexuality impacted? Did she adjust to being a Catholic better? Did she reject it in a more mindful way?
I don't know.
I don't know what that means either.
You'd have to ask her ultimately, but she, right. That's an interesting question. I never really talked to her about that. She was a little bit more rebellious mm-hmm. than I was. I mean, I did all the bad things, but I kept it under my hat.
You murdered people?
Well, no, not that. Like teenage bad things.
What's the limit on bad things?
Well, I'm not like.
Can you list them off?
Like drinking,
okay.
smoking,
mm-hmm.
marijuana use,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of things.
Did you wiggle inside someone pre-age of majority?
No, I didn't. I didn't do that till I was 19.
Okay, so that was a college thing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is my town was very small,
mm-hmm.
and once you've been rejected by the few girls in your town, there's that's it.
Oh, I was hoping your town was so small that every time somebody broke up, they just kind of changed partners and
Well, the popular kids sort of did actually,
yeah.
but I was not.
Mm.
I was not in the inner circle
because of your freakish ginger. Lack of melanin thing?
Pretty much,
mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah.
What's happened to some of those popular kids now? Have enough of them before their time, sadly, quote-unquote, died, and you feel some sense of vindication, like you got yours now for making fun of me or not fucking me?
No, none of the girls that I knew now have gone. They all
about
seem,
the guys? How many are alive?
I think almost all of them are
really?
Alive. Yeah.
Do you Facebook with them?
Some of them. More of the nerdy kids that I hung out with, mm-hmm. we're more Facebook. Well, and I hung out with the football players, but they were outcasts at my school too.
Really? The football players?
Yeah, it was a soccer town.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Would you bond with the football players over just being outcasts, or would you try to get them into film? Would you be able to talk to them about film back then?
Sure, yeah.
When did you start to really embrace your passion for film?
Very early. I mean, I loved going to the movies as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
My parents didn't really go to the movies that much. So when I got a little older, you know, I would get them to drop me off at the mall so I could go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right from the get-go.
What was the mall?
Well, there were a couple of multiplexes.
Mm-hmm.
There was one at the Framingham Mall,
mm-hmm.
and there was, a standalone multiplex, across Route 9 from that mall,
mm-hmm.
in Natick.
Okay, because I didn't know if you had strip malls or interior malls or how...
The mall...
How in the boonies turning into...
Yeah, the mall...
Urban.
Was an outdoor mall,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't a strip mall.
Okay.
It was like a big outdoor mall that had the multiplex
mm-hmm.
that I frequented.
Can you imagine, put yourself back there at one end of the mall
mm-hmm.
and start walking with me very slowly and tell me what the shops are you see and maybe who you see doing what as you're walking to the movie theater?
Well, the movie theater was right there. So I didn't really walk through the mall very much. I'd just go into the movie theater.
That's not helping me.
But in the mall, there was like a Toys R Us.
Great.
And there was a Papagino's.
Papagino.
Which is a pizza place.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I think, maybe a Marshall's or something like that
mm-hmm.
on one end.
Mm-hmm.
The other end from the Toys R Us.
Would you smoke your marijuana in the alleys?
I didn't smoke
there?
A lot of marijuana when I was in high school, really.
Well, all your sinning, where did it take place mostly?
Mostly at friends' houses.
Oh, yeah?
On the weekends. Yeah.
What about in the apple orchards of the Richie Rich?
I didn't do a lot of drinking in the apple orchards, but mm-hmm. like occasionally when people were going to have a big house party because their parents were out of town,
uh-huh.
and if that fell through, then we go to the Narrows.
Which were?
It was just a place in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
And what was Narrow?
That's just what it was called.
Well, were the trees really close together?
No.
Were there two rock faces that were close together?
I don't think so.
Why the fuck was it called the Narrows?
I don't know. It's just what it was called.
Was there a small stream?
there was a, it was near a river.
Would you ever stick a little corncob pipe in an apple and drink out of a tree while wearing overalls, but only kind of on one shoulder, and say, "I'm a woodland hick. Here's my apple cider. Yuck, yuck, yuck. I'm from Sherbourne." Ding, 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 ding.
No, I never did that.
All right, so it wasn't that much boonies, hick fuck, becoming suburban. It was always ex-urban. It was just its own pleasant thing.
I suppose.
Okay, I just want to understand the evolution of Sherbourne.
Yeah, I mean,
why did your parents move there?
Because they liked the town. It was pretty. It's pretty. They like New England. And
how far was it from where they worked? Or did they work?
Well, my dad worked in Boston.
Mm-hmm. So what was that commute?
And Cambridge for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was like, at rush hour, it could be, an hour.
Jeez.
But when traffic was light, you could get in there in a half hour, 40 minutes.
Even back in the day?
Back in the day, yeah.
Because now I'd assume it's more impacted and that's worse.
Probably.
Are they still there?
My folks live in New Hampshire now.
Yeah? Why'd they get the F out of there?
Because Massachusetts has really high property taxes.
Yeah?
And Sherbourne, the property values skyrocketed because it became so wealthy.
Oh, okay.
And my father had a choice. They built the house that I grew up in.
Awesome.
And so it was their dream. It's their dream house.
Mm-hmm.
So part of them wanted to stay, but my dad, sort of crunched the numbers and said, "Well, I'm going to have to keep working for another 10 years
just to pay the taxes,
just to be able to retire here, or we can move to New Hampshire, where there are no property taxes, and retire right now." And he was an IBMer, and IBM, it was kind of falling apart. So he wasn't particularly happy working there anymore. And he actually became a consultant for a bank for a while.
He wasn't particularly happy?
No, not particularly happy. Yeah.
I just want to see how long I'm going to go on this podcast today. Well, what do you think works for you? How many minutes do you want to be interviewed?
I like to keep it to no more than 60 minutes.
All right, great. Good. So we have a little more time. Tell me more about your relationship with your sister. Is she older, younger?
She's younger.
Big rifts? What was the gap between you in ages?
A couple years.
So when she was rebellious, did you feel like I'm a bad big brother because my parents are looking to me to kind of help keep her in check and guide her? Or were you pissed off she's not listening to you? She's cutting too wild?
No.
Okay.
I mean, we had a contentious relationship growing up. We're basic brother-sister tension, sure. I mean, we don't have that anymore as adults, but...
Really? Did that end?
Well, basically after I moved out.
Yeah? You just needed to get out of there, give her some space, and it could all subside?
Yeah. Well, and she mellowed out when she left, too. It's just part of growing up.
So you were perfect, and she needed to mellow out.
No, I wasn't perfect, but...
But she needed to mellow out.
Well, she was combative with everybody. Yeah, sure.
But have you changed? And when did you change?
I've changed lots of times.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
What do you think is going to happen when one of your parents dies?
What do you mean?
In terms of your relationship with your sister and old memories and issues being dredged up.
I don't think that'll happen.
No?
No, I don't.
You don't think...
We're very supportive of each other in that kind of sad situation that you're forcing me to think about.
But when you're
no reason,
when your second parent passes away,
why are
going to be things you have to deal with, and she's going to be closer geographically, and maybe
to them, that's true.
Do you think about the fact that the onus will kind of quasi-implicitly more be on her to deal with whatever's going on? Do you think you're going to get some guilt from her about you being off in La La Land, actor boy?
Well, I think I'll probably go back east and help out with those things.
Mm-hmm.
She's very understanding of my life choices and supportive. I don't think that she would be that way.
Would you prefer that... your parents died quickly, or
why do we have to keep on this thing about parents and death? Why do I have to think about that?
Well, I'm curious. It's something I ask many of my guests. It's kind of it's like those books you read when you're on the crapper, just like this or this. Like, they're both bad choices, but it kind of reveals a little bit about your state and your philosophy at this point in time. Would you rather they suffered for a year?
Why would I want them to suffer?
But you could say goodbye to them, or that they died instantly, no pain, but you don't get to say goodbye.
I don't know.
If one of your parents had to suffer and the other one didn't, which one?
Why are you making me choose between my mother and father and who's going to suffer more? I don't get it.
Well, maybe one.
You're asking me to play favorites between my mother and father.
You don't have a
favorite. In regard to their death.
You don't have a favorite? Come on.
This is an inappropriate line of questioning, it seems to me.
I concur.
So you agree with me, but yet you continue with the line of pressing me.
I live a life of impropriety. So you're absolutely right. But I'm curious. You know what you would do. Your answer may change next week.
Yeah, I'm gonna demur. I'm not gonna answer these questions because I honestly have never thought about that, and quite frankly, I don't want to.
All right. What are some other issues in your life that you plumb as deeply as these issues?
Give me some examples. I don't know what kind of issues you seem
scared to go anywhere besides the most shallow. Is that why you love movies, because you look outwards and not inwardly?
I think I do look inwardly quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I like movies for multiple reasons. I do enjoy escapist films, but I also like thoughtful films that make you think about yourself. So I don't know what you're getting at exactly.
But do you like to rehash things that have already taken place, or do you ever like to consider what's going to happen in the future and prepare for it?
Yes, I do think about what's happening, possibilities.
Do you have an earthquake kit at home? And when was last time you worked with your family on an earthquake plan?
We just did that, actually. Yeah, we just did our earthquake kit.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about that recently. We just had earthquakes here in California.
Yeah, that's why we were thinking about it. Yeah.
When do you think was the last time you did that? Like, birth of your son, Colby?
Your earthquake kit?
Yeah.
We've never done it before.
Yeah.
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 We always have a lot of supplies in the house, but this time we made it specific.
Have you double checked with your parents that they have life insurance, a living trust, and or a will?
Why would I? Because probate
is hell, and I'd love to save you from that. They made a wise decision to move to a place where there's no real estate taxes, I guess, reportedly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, you know, they're thinking about a lot of issues that impact the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering about the burdens and stresses that can come between siblings when one or more parents die.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're very responsible people. I'm sure they have all their ducks in a row. I'm not worried about that.
Do you think you'll check after the first one dies? Will you kind of query the living parent and say, by the way, you know, could I see a file, or is there a safety deposit box I should check out?
I don't think I would be insensitive on that level. My family's not like that. Yeah, yeah, no. Okay.
Is that a Catholic thing? Is that an Irish thing? What is that?
It's not. I don't think that's an Irish Catholic thing. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a respectful thing, and I'm not going to make anyone's passing about me or my finances.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You don't think they should think about their legacy? You don't think it would be a comment on their love for you, whether or not they took the time to make things easier for you when they pass?
Something tells me that they probably have taken steps to mm-hmm. make those things easier. Mm-hmm. But if they haven't, they haven't. It's fine.
Now, does this come from your Catholic upbringing, that you're scared to ask questions? That you have urges, but you constantly suppress and repress?
I don't have any. I've never had any urges to talk to my parents about wills and dying.
So how would your sexuality have been differently expressed, articulated, had you not been Catholic? There's no way to know this for sure. You have one life, but where does your mind go?
I honestly don't. I don't know. I would like to think that if I had been brought up not in the Catholic religion, that I wouldn't have the issues of guilt surrounding sex that mm-hmm. I do.
And you still do. Married with a child.
Uh-huh. It never goes away. That which...
Do you think you're going to burn in hell? Because I thought you can just say...
No, I know intellectually that's ridiculous. And I know intellectually that my guilt is ridiculous. But because mm-hmm. it was ingrained in me as a child, mm-hmm. this is what happens. Stuff gets ingrained with you as mm-hmm. a child, and then it's stuff you have to deal with for the rest of your life. It's not stuff you can get rid of.
Do you think it's in there on a cellular level, and it's starting to give you a cancer?
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Or an ulcer or something. Possible. Something not fun.
Yeah, possible.
Do you ever look at your life and say, yeah, but you know, I love my wife and I love my son so much. And if any little thing had been different, it wouldn't have led to this exact moment in time. So now that Colby exists,
mm-hmm.
you need to forgive your entire past
mm-hmm.
and just focus on the future. So what are your goals in terms of a war against the Catholic Church or the films you want to write and make? What are you going to do looking forward?
Well, I'm not going to have a war with the Catholic Church, but I think you've given some very sage advice there that if I hadn't been brought up Catholic, perhaps I wouldn't have wanted to be an actor, and perhaps I wouldn't have come out here, and you're right, there would be no Colby. So that's a nice way of looking at things.
Do you think your parents have a favorite, you or your sister?
No.
You don't think either parent has a slight favorite?
If they have a favorite, it's neither me nor my sister.
So you're saying they're very self-obsessed?
No, I have a young brother.
You do?
Younger brother, yeah.
What's up with him?
He lives in D.C. He's a lawyer.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, phew for your parents. They got something.
Yeah, well, he's a defense attorney.
Oh.
A public defender.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, he's very... socially minded, very socio-politically minded.
Something to be proud of. Thank yeah. God for them.
Yeah, yeah, lucky them.
Oh, my God. Did you see that guy's ad during the Super Bowl, the regional thing from the private defense attorney with the sledgehammer with the fire and the...
No.
He had been some defense attorney for, like, mafioso types, and he felt bad about it, and after his brother got killed, he said, I'm going to change my life, and... defend people who really need to be defended, the good people or something like that. And he made this kind of so-called epic commercial that ran during the Super Bowl, but just ran locally, but it went viral. And anyway, so just speaking of defense attorneys who want to be more socially minded, what kind of causes does he battle for?
Well, he and his wife defend young people quite
mm-hmm.
a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Kids who've gotten in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of their thing. They don't think that the legal system as it is currently gives young people of certain ethnicities a fair shake.
Mm-hmm. Does he ever battle to make sure they're tried as minors, juveniles, instead of adults?
He's had that. I mean, mostly what he hassles with is, you know, drug charges and
mm-hmm.
Thefts and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And do you have other siblings or just the three of you?
It's just the three.
And he's definitely the one to be proud of.
Well, I mean, I think you can be proud of, they're probably proud of everybody. all the kids.
Yeah, to your capacity, to your level. But nominally, you know, he's more.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Because as long as you're trying, that's all I want my kids to do. I just want them to try and do their best.
Right.
You know, so if Todd is doing his best with his film-related stuff in L.A., that's nice, and we love him, and we just hope he's happy. But then they have this lawyer son. Wow, I mean, we can talk to our friends about this. We can really be nominally proud, not relatively percentage-wise, but it's just something globally.
Right.
That says, you know, we did great. You burned the first waffle. The second waffle's a little crispy. The third one is just golden. Mm. So he's the youngest sibling?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you always get it right with a third one. That's why we thought we should have a third child. Because I know I've made many mistakes. I wonder if then that's another reason adoption is just a cop-out. You're not really...
How is it a cop-out?
You know, on one side, you know, there are too many people in the world and there are enough kids in the world, so we don't need to add to it, and it's beautiful. Bring them into your family and take care of them. But then, why not put your balls out there and do it from the start?
Well, not everybody has the ability to have children.
Oh, yeah.
That's biologically, my sister and her husband were trying to have mm-hmm. a second one, mm-hmm. but they ultimately decided that it wasn't going to work, mm-hmm. and so they adopted.
Yeah.
And their adopted daughter is Ray of Sunshine. She's marvelous.
Yeah. Do they adopt a very young child or an old child?
Yeah, they got her as a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the old kids who need homes?
What about them? What's your...
Does your sister have any guilt, the fact that she's not... bring a teenager into her home? They need love. They need home.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think that she has guilt about that.
Mm-hmm. What about you? Are you going to do that?
Adopt teenagers?
Why not?
No. I don't have the money.
Money? They can get a job. What do they need?
Well, it's not...
There's public school.
Yeah, but there's more to it than that. And then there's college and...
Public college.
Still, there's... There's expenses to consider.
But did you help out building the home in Sherbourne? Like, are you good with your hands? Do you know how to build things at all?
Oh, I didn't build it.
Yeah, but did you learn?
They hired people to build it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
They didn't build it with their hands.
So they kind of designed it, and they co-created it, but they didn't. He wasn't a carpenter. He was an IBM guy.
Yeah, he hired carpenters to build the house. Yeah.
Did your mom work at all?
She was a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
But before I was born, she was a nurse.
Ah.
Both a surgical nurse for a while and a psychiatric nurse for a while. Oh. And then when the kids got older, she tried going back to being a surgical nurse
mm-hmm.
and found that she no longer had the stomach mm-hmm. for it.
Because mm-hmm. She wasn't Filipina?
What?
What?
It has nothing to do with her being... Why Filipina? What would that have anything...
Oh, most nurses I meet are Filipina.
That's not the point of what I...
Well, they've taught me phrases in Tagalog. I mean, I love it. I love talking to them. Dirty things like putang ina mo.
It's
filthy. I'm not going to translate that for you.
All right. Well, in any event, she decided to go back to school, and she became a certified accountant.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
She fully licensed?
Yeah, she still works at tax time every year. She's only semi-retired.
Did she work for one of the big 8 accounting firms before it became 65432? Do you remember if she worked and got hours with a big firm?
No.
No?
She worked for a smaller place.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you need the Pope to do?
What do you mean?
In terms of changing all of Catholicism?
Well, I mean, he would have to aggressively change the way Catholics view homosexuality, mm-hmm. The way...
He said some things that were I thought,
yes, he says things.
Supportive.
Yes, he says things. And that's true. Mm-hmm. And also there, the Catholic Church's unending battle against contraception. He needs to change that. And just the concept of sex as a sin, premarital sex as a sin.
You are boring me. Let's talk about Haunted House 2.
Okay.
When I watched the trailer for that this morning,
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, there's not much more I needed to say than I said in the Film Pig's Rash Judgment last night. But I was still thinking, that's exactly the kind of movie I want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of movie do you want to be a part of?
I would like to be a part of absurdist comedy. Sure. I don't know if I want to be a part of the Haunted House franchise. I mean, I would mind. But I think if I were to make parody movies, I'd want to be sort of start at the ground floor. I'd want to be involved in the writing of the parody as well as the performance.
You've been doing a lot of writing. Do you write mostly with projects in mind that you'd hope you could act in, or is that not important, or is it the most important?
I used to write stuff for myself, but I don't really do that anymore. Most of what I write is, you know, prose. I don't write a lot of screenplays.
No. Okay.
The only time I write stuff for the screen is when I'm, like the Film Pigs, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to be producing it. I no longer, I have a drawer full of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't spend my time on that anymore.
I used to think that when people wrote something for themselves, it was just so narcissistic, and ridiculous. I thought, you should just write a project and the piece should be good. It should just mm-hmm. be its own entity.
Sure.
And just put it out there when you write. But I think from a production standpoint, it's one less role to cast if you actually write yourself in there. It actually makes it easier.
And sure.
These days, people are like, why not pitch us a project that you're in as well? Like, why don't you want that? Why don't you want a piece of that? So, but you've been, how many pieces of prose have you written? How many letters?
Letters?
Yeah.
I don't really write letters.
Words.
How many words?
Yeah.
Over, I don't know, a lot.
I mean, do you do a word count when you write a piece?
No, not really.
You spell check?
Yeah, sure.
Do you ever write by hand anymore? Is it always on the computer?
I usually write on the computer, but sometimes I do write by hand.
Mm-hmm. So now I know you wrote a wonderful book about acting.
Uh-huh.
How many books have you written?
Well, I wrote that, and then I wrote a horror novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on another horror novel right now.
And what if you got branded as the horror novel guy for kind of the rest of your life? Would that be okay? And you just bust out with a different nom de plume, nom de guerre, you know, to do some side stories? Or, you know, what if people want to limit you? They want to say he's this thing. Would that be okay?
At this stage, yes.
At this stage, yes. But then the book comes out. And uh-huh. it's enough, and they're like, what else you got? And just keep writing
horror.
This type of stuff, and you'd be okay?
I'm okay with that. Yeah, if they were paying me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You just want to work, write, provide for your family.
That's it. If people wanted me to write horror shows, horror novels, then I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I do it because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes when you start getting paid for something and it becomes your job, you enjoy it less. But I'm willing to take that risk.
You're a strong man.
I am strong.
Who are some of your favorite writers in that genre?
In the horror genre?
Yeah.
Well, I did grow up liking Stephen King a lot.
Right.
But currently I read this guy, Brian Keene,
mm-hmm.
a lot. He's very good.
Yeah.
And I've always liked Clive Barker's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Are you willing to go out on a limb and slam somebody as being overrated?
I can't think of anyone who I think is terribly overrated.
God damn it. So fucking positive. All right. Then I'm done.
That's okay.
Oh, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Toncast. This has been my guest, Todd Robert Anderson. My name's Evan Arnold, your host, as sometimes. Go forth in love and peace to serve the Lord.